Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, December 22nd, and I'm Nat Cardos, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, winter storm hammers Humboldt, Mendocino, and Del Norte counties. More to come. Redway Community Services District declares conservation level stage 4 water emergency for Redway. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
Yesterday, a winter storm caused significant flooding throughout Humboldt County, trapping some in their homes and causing a several-hour shutdown of both lanes of the Highway 101 near Lolita. Throughout the day, the National Weather Service in Eureka observed approximately 2 to 3 inches of rainfall. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office Swift Water Rescue Team aided residents in Bayside, Freshwater, and Elk River areas as rivers and creeks flooded, trapping motorists in their vehicles as well. KMUD News spoke to Humboldt County Sheriff William Hansel for more information about these efforts.
So at the Sheriff's Office, we set aside three deputies and a sergeant to be a part of our special services team. And this team is in charge of all of our search and rescues. They're our search managers. They're also in charge of these kind of rescue operations. And so we give them specific training about, you know, how to rescue people in water conditions, whether it's the river or whether it's rising floodwaters or if, you know, if they're in the ocean or surf. So we give them this vital training to assist. And so our Swift Water Rescue Team and our Special Services Team and members of our Sheriff's Posse, or Sheriff's Search and Rescue Team, were deployed yesterday because there were several residents that had reported that they were trapped by the rising waters of creeks and streams in the Bayside, Freshwater, and Elk River areas. And so we responded with our team, and they have small boats that are able to maneuver in and out of these smaller areas with that can be launched easily, as well as jet skis that are able to go in and out and to safely, you know, help evacuate and rescue people, you know, that are trapped in their homes due to the rising waters.
Yesterday, the Sheriff's Office received many calls from residents reporting impassable areas and flooded roadways, as well as welfare checks for friends and family. The Sheriff's Office performed multiple evacuations during the storm with the help of small boats and jet skis. As of recording today, Monday, December 22nd, flooding from the rivers is still affecting roadways and causing multiple road closures.
Yes. So we had several, you know, a lot of phone calls for impacts to the weather. We had lots of people reporting flooded roadways, impassable areas, as well as people calling us to check on people that they knew were in areas where the waters were rising. So some of the things we did was we did welfare checks on people. Some people wanted a shelter in place. The water didn't actually make it to inside their home, so they're able to stay. There were other people that, you know, needed to be evacuated because water was coming inside their homes, and we were able to safely evacuate those. So we had three of those evacuations where we had to respond and help people be evacuated from their homes. So we assisted them with our boats and our jet skis. We had people that also, you know, didn't heed the warning and started driving in areas that was impassable by their car, and their car got stopped or stuck or swept off the road. And so we had to assist several people with those type of incidents. So that's, you know, that's why we say, please do not drive in areas where the roadway is flooded. And we're actually responding to a call right now in Ferndale where a lady was driving her vehicle in one of the roadways in the Ferndale Bottoms, right next to the river, and she was trying to make a delivery, and her car got swept with the current. And so we're actively trying to rescue her right now, and I pray that we can get to her in time so we can, you know, help save her. But so nothing is worth, you know, driving, you know, your own life isn't worth it, you know, to try and maneuver in some of these flooded roadways. Just go around or come back later. And usually within 4 to 5 hours, you know, conditions change within the county. And so hopefully the roadways will be passable again.
The total of damages that occurred over the storm is still being estimated. In Eureka, the high winds from the storm caused damage to Fire Station 3 off of Ocean Avenue from a nearby tree falling on it. It caused damage to a portion of the fence, as well as the service drop and natural gas line pipes. KMUD News spoke to Nathan Baxley, Battalion Chief with Humboldt Bay Fire, for more information.
The bull pine has been a notorious neighboring tree that is close to Fire Station 3 at 2905 Ocean. Heavily leaning towards the station and just got saturated and weighted limbs. There's some rot in the tree. It came down, took out a portion of the fence, limiting ingress and egress as far as accessing the back of the station. And then it came down, a portion of it came down and took out the service drop, which was tied into also our natural gas lines as far as the way that the service drop and the natural gas line pipes were mounted to the side of the station, took out, you know, our ability to have utilities power at the station for our personnel, which also created issues with our communication issues, because powering those units is where we hold some of our central mainframes and repeaters for our radios. So we just had to kind of pivot and adjust, and we sent the three folks that were staffed to other engines and just staffed them with four people rather than the three that which we normally operate with, and then we just operated as usual. So we responded to calls for service. It wasn't really that big of a deal. It was just to make notifications in, you know, the community so that the station would be closed for the next couple of days until we could get back online.
Crews are already working on bringing the fire station back to operational order, with the estimated date for it to be back running being December 24th. Due to this unforeseen circumstance, the station has had to pivot, sending the three firefighters staffed there to other nearby stations.
Natural hazard that came down in a winter storm, and those things happen. It just happened to us. We usually respond to those types of calls for the community serve, and this time it took out our own station. So that's the way it goes.
According to the National Weather Service in Eureka, another storm will be bringing even more rain, up to 4 to 8 inches between today and Friday evening, and a flood watch is in effect from tonight through Friday evening. Additional precipitation amounts of 4 to 8 inches are reportedly possible through Friday. The rainfall from yesterday broke a record for the National Weather Service in Eureka that was set back in 1964. KMUN News spoke to Jacob Boomsma, meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Eureka, for more information.
We still have flood warnings out for the Eel River at Fernbridge. It is still above moderate flood stage, 10 a.m. this morning. And that is the only river that is still within flood stage as of now. And it's forecast to drop below flood stage. It's already peaked and it's dropping. It should drop to below flood stage by this afternoon sometime, maybe around 5 or 6 p.m.
There is still a flood warning in effect for Eel River at Fernbridge, and there are still multiple road closures due to flooding in Ferndale. Another storm system will be blowing in tonight, bringing some strong winds and more rain. Del Norte and northern Humboldt counties are expected to see 2.5 to 4 inches of rain from Tuesday to Friday. Meanwhile, southern and interior Humboldt, Trinity, Mendocino, and Lake counties are expected to see more, with roughly between 4 to 6 inches of rain.
Yeah, so we have another system coming in kind of starting tonight, and then the bulk of the impacts will be tomorrow morning, afternoon. So that's going to give us another round of heavy rain, a lot of rain in a short amount of time. Generally from tonight through Wednesday morning, we're looking at another 2 to 4 inches of rain in Humboldt County. There could certainly be some small stream and creek flooding, some rapid rises in the rivers as well. It kind of depends where the moisture plume is focused on, onto which river we'll see those rapid rises, but they're not given a lot of time to recede and drain. So as of now, we're not forecasting any rivers to re-enter flood stage except the Russian River at Hopland, but that could change if the rainfall is focused within a specific river basin. Like with this last system, it was focused mostly in the Eel and the Mad River basin.
Aside from the rain, strong southerly winds are also expected coming in Tuesday night to Wednesday, coming in at approximately 20 to 40 miles per hour with gusts up to 50 miles per hour. There's currently a high wind warning for Mendocino County and Lake County.
So we have also some pretty strong winds forecast coming in Tuesday night and to Wednesday. Still a little uncertainty on the magnitude, but we could see, we have a low right off the coast of California, and these often give us some of the strongest winds that we get. So depending on where that low is focused is going to determine who gets the strongest winds, but we can certainly see some winds in the higher end scenarios of upwards of 40, 50 miles per hour. So we're still tracking that, but prepare for some strong southerly winds Tuesday night into Wednesday.
In light of these winter storms, it's important to make sure you are prepared for emergencies. Limit travel and driving during storms, and if a road looks impassable, it probably is impassable, and it's important to find another route. Here's some advice from Sheriff Hansel, Battalion Chief Baxley, and Jacob Boomsma on how to stay safe during the upcoming storm.
I urge people to prepare. Make sure you have food and water on hand. Prepare for the worst. Everyone should always have 3 days of food and water on hand. If you have a generator, make sure that it is serviceable. Make sure it has plenty of gasoline so you can keep things running. And only travel tomorrow if it's necessary. And if there is a flooded roadway, please do not attempt to drive through it. Please go around because, again, the water is swift. And the last thing we need is for people to get their car swept away and then for something bad to happen when it really isn't necessary.
I would say to avoid those areas. I know that yesterday when I was responding for calls for service, there was a lot of folks out in the freshwater area and Elk Creek area. A couple feet of water on the road will push a vehicle off those banks, and you have no idea if there's sinkholes or anything like that from water erosion as they're coming over the road. So to drive blindly over those roads thinking that you've got, a full-size pickup or you feel comfortable driving across it in a sedan or two-wheel drive vehicle, you don't know what you can't see. And just to avoid those areas or find alternative routes. And with power lines and winds, same as always, avoid that as well and call 911. And our Eureka Fire Police and Dispatch will triage that and send the appropriate resources and just avoid the area in general and stay safe.
Yeah, so if you are someone who experienced flooding in the storm that just happened Sunday, it's very possible that you can experience some flooding impacts again. They might not be quite to the same level, but the ground is saturated. We got a lot more rain coming, so prepare for more flooding. And if you're traveling, the mountains will also be getting a lot of rain, so there is increased risk for rock and mudslides as well. So before heading out to travel, check the forecast and Caltrans. Make sure that your road is passable and open, and prepare for travel delays and to drive slowly and safely.
KMUD News will continue to provide updates and emergency information during these winter storms. Due to this past weekend's storm, Red Wake Community Services District's water tanks and filtration systems were overwhelmed from the flooding of the Eel River. Due to this, the water supply has been compromised for Red Wake, and Red Wake CSD is declaring a conservation level 4 water emergency. From today to the next 5 to 7 days, or possibly longer, they are asking residents of Red Wake to limit water usage to 50 gallons per person per day. KMUD News spoke to Cody Cox, General Manager for the Red Wake Community Services District, for more information.
Yeah, so what happened is we experienced extremely high levels. We got to flood stage. Our telemetry showed that we got to 35.5 feet. So our natural turbidity unit went up to over 100 NTU. That's the turbidity of the water, which isn't allowing us to treat and send the water to storage. Right now, we're having difficulties treating the water to a potable standard so that we are able to send that to storage. So right now, we currently have 340,000 gallons of storage left. And I need to add that we're also in the middle of a grant that's called the Red Wake Water Supply, Emergency Water Supply and Storage Grant. And so we're down one tank. We've demolished one tank and we're in the middle of building the replacement tank. So right now we only have the one storage tank. So that's the situation that Red Wake CSD is facing right now.
There is a possibility that the water emergency could last longer than 5 to 7 days, and Red Wake CSD is looking into possibly getting water trucked into the water treatment plant to boost it up to storage. Water for Red Wake is treated out of the South Fork of the Eel River, and due to rainfall and flooding, filters were overwhelmed and storage was lost due to backwashing the filters. Cox elaborates further on the issue.
So we treat out of the South Fork of the Eel River. It's conventional treatment. We have a clarifier and disinfectant, which is chlorine, and then we have a series of four filters. So right now the filters are loading up very quickly because of the turbid water, and the filters just can't take the load. So we're having to consistently backwash. And when you have to consistently backwash, you end up chasing your tail and losing storage. So as operators, we have to make that decision to stay static and try to treat the water as best we can. One MTU drops down to a reasonable level, which is below 80.
From today till approximately next Monday, Redway residents can minimize their water usage by taking shorter showers, avoiding using dishwashers, and avoiding using any large volumes of water in general. KMUD News will continue to provide updates on water usage in Redway as they are received. In national news, Department of Justice offering cash rewards for turning in leftists to FBI for, quote, domestic terrorism, targeting immigrant and trans right advocates. KPFA's Christina Onnestead reports.
A directive by Attorney General Pam Bondi will offer the public money for turning in a broad swath of leftists to the FBI to investigate. Critics are calling it a bounty. It's part of enacting President Donald Trump's executive order declaring Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. Bondi's December 4th memo is far-reaching. It targets immigrant and trans rights advocates, replacing white supremacists that were once considered the top domestic threat. It says these domestic terrorists are engaged in violence or threats of violence, including opposition to law and immigration enforcement, extreme views in favor of mass migration and open borders, adherence to radical gender ideology, anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, anti-Christianity, and those who express hostility towards traditional views on family, religion, and morality. Bondi's definition of domestic terrorism is also broad, targeting people who engage in Antifa-related activities, like organized rioting, conspiracies to impede or assault law enforcement, efforts to change or direct policy outcomes, and doxing. It cites the Antifa slogans on bullet casings used to assassinate right-wing conservative Charlie Kirk earlier this year as an example of the threat Antifa poses. The six-page memo released by The Washington Post and Pink News directs the FBI to create a phone tip line to report these radical left-wing extremists. It includes lists of actions to report, like doxing. Bondi's memo suggests groups that fall under the government's definition of domestic terrorism would be prosecuted and face a list of charges, including RICO Act violations, fraud, and conspiracy against the United States, which carries a minimum sentence of 5 years in prison. It also includes more obscure charges that appear to clamp down on the First Amendment, like picketing or parading with the intent to obstruct administration of justice, and obstruction or disruption in or on federal property, conspiracy against rights, and several fraud statutes. The directive, clearly politically motivated. After all, President Donald Trump pardoned some 1,000 supporters of his who were jailed for storming the U.S. Capitol, many violently attacking police and federal property to overturn his election loss. But his Justice Department's memo doesn't mention that or them. It mentions the Antifa Handbook, whose author fled to Europe after being doxxed by right-wing groups and receiving death threats in the United States. The memo comes as a new report by the UK's Guardian, citing internal FBI documents, finding domestic terrorism investigations into immigrant rights groups in at least 23 regions across the United States. I'm Christina Onnestead, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
Barbara Lee versus Trump lawsuit over January 6 insurrection goes to court as Trump claims immunity, KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
A federal trial court in Washington, D.C. heard arguments Friday in a civil lawsuit against President Donald Trump for his role in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Joe Sellers, lawyer for the plaintiffs, spoke to reporters after the hearing.
This case was first brought in February of 2021. So we are past the four-year anniversary, or almost the fifth-year anniversary, and our clients are looking forward to their day in court as soon as possible.
The lawsuit was filed by the NAACP and several members of Congress. There have been other lawsuits over the insurrection, but now it's down to this one.
This is the last of the cases that is challenging President Trump's role in the January 6th riots. So in terms of legal cases, I believe it's the last one that remains.
Before the January 6th attack, Trump spoke to a crowd of his supporters at the Stop the Steal rally near the White House, after which many attendees marched to the Capitol in an attempt to stop Congress from certifying the results of the 2020 presidential election. More than 100 police officers were injured while defending the Capitol. Lawyers for Trump argue that he is immune from liability because he was acting in his official capacity as president. Attorney Joshua Halpern told the judge the entire point of immunity is to give the president clarity to speak in the moment as the commander-in-chief. Plaintiff's lawyers argue Trump was an office seeker who is not entitled to immunity. The lawsuit is called Barbara Lee et al. Versus Donald Trump. The lead plaintiff, Oakland Mayor Barbara Lee, was a member of the House of Representatives in 2021.
I was sitting on the floor of Congress on January 6th.
She thanked the legal team, and especially the NAACP, for keeping the case going.
Our plaintiffs, myself included, believe that no one is above the law. And I believe when the discussion today in court revealed the fact that there are some in this country who do believe that a president could be above the law.
The lawsuit relies on an 1871 law written to protect people from the Ku Klux Klan. The lawsuit lists as defendants, besides Trump, the Oath Keepers militia and the group Proud Boys. On his first day in office, President Trump pardoned, commuted prison sentences, and ordered the dismissal of all 1,500-plus criminal cases. But the civil case against Trump remains, and the plaintiffs say it could be the last chance to hold Trump accountable for the insurrection. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Before the year's end, President Trump is expected to sign a bill that would give Alaska Native veterans an extension to file for their Native allotments. As KMBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, more time is needed to help veterans navigate what they say has been a cumbersome and frustrating process.
After several failed attempts to get the Senate to pass an extension, the window for Alaska Native veterans to claim federal land was about to close forever. But on December 16th, Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan's bill passed by unanimous consent. The Republican senator had tied the veterans' extension to three other bills that had bipartisan support.
It wasn't easy, but we got this done at the buzzer. It's going to be signed into law. It's going to go over to the White House. The president's going to sign this, and we're going to get to work and get these heroes the land allotments that they deserved.
Benno Cleveland, president of the Alaska Native Veterans Council, has waited for this moment for a long time.
I felt very happy, content within the heart. We've been battling with the Alaska Native Vietnam Veterans land allotment for over 30 years.
The extension now gives Alaska Native veterans until 2030 to claim 160 acres of federal land, made available to them under a law Congress passed more than 100 years ago. But when the federal program ended in 1971, Vietnam vets missed out because many were overseas fighting the war. An estimated 2,000 veterans are eligible for this program, but as of mid-month, only about 25% had filed. Native vets said they had difficulty meeting the deadline due to a complicated process and limited land availability. Cleveland hopes the extension will allow more time to convince Congress to make more federal land available for veterans closer to their homelands. He says they deserve it.
We've gone through hell, but we went when our country called and we did our duty to the nation and to our people.
Cleveland says it's a shame politics gets in the way of honoring veterans, but the important thing, he says, is that Congress finally got the job done. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
A Wisconsin tribe is suing the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. As Danielle Kading reports, the Bad River tribe has filed a lawsuit to overturn a federal permit for a Canadian energy firm's plans to reroute its oil and gas pipeline.
Earth Justice attorney Gussie Lord represents the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Lord claims the Army Corps violated federal environmental laws when it issued a permit this fall to Canadian energy firm Enbridge. She says the agency failed to adequately review environmental effects of the company's plans to build a 41-mile segment of its Line 5 pipeline around the tribe's reservation.
They didn't do that in a number of ways, including threat of oil spill, threat of impacts to on and off reservation exercise of treaty rights, and also the state's water quality certification has been challenged by the band, and that's not final.
Enbridge wants to build a new stretch of Line 5 after the tribe sued in 2019 to shut down the pipeline on its lands. Bad River Tribal Chairwoman Elizabeth Arbuckle said the tribe and other communities would, quote, suffer unacceptable consequences in the event of an oil spill. An Enbridge spokesperson said the company's permit is not yet final, but it plans to defend the Corps' upcoming decision in the lawsuit. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
On Friday, a jury ruled in favor of the Native-led organization Indian Collective and individual plaintiffs in a discrimination lawsuit against the owners of the Grand Gateway Hotel in Rapid City, South Dakota. Indian Collective will be paid $1, a request made by the organization. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez, and thanks to our reporters, Christina Onnested, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMO News is online, and you can find us on KMO.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.